भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Namam Vishnuvanaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani Namaste Saraswata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivari Pastata Deshatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Prima Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Verse 29. Shri Patnya Ocho Maivam Vibor Ati Bhavan Garitam Nrasangsam Satyam Kurushva Nigamam Tava Padamulam Prapta Vayam Tulasi Dama Padavasrishtam Keshair Nibodum Atilongya Samasta Bandun Maivam vibhor hati bhavan garitam nrasangsam.
Maivam vibhor hati bhavan garitam nrasangsam.
Satyam kurushva nigamam tava padamulam.
Satyam kurushva nigamam tava padamulam.
Prapta vayam tulasi dhamma padavasishtam. Keshayani vodam ati longya samasta bandhun.
Keshayani vodam ati longya samasta
bandhun. Maivam vibhor hati bhavan garitam rasangsam.
Maivam vibhor hati bhavan garitam
rasangsam. Satyam kurushva nigamam tava padamulam. Prapta vayam tulasi dhamma padavasishtam.
Prapta vayam tulasi dhamma padavasishtam.
Keshayani vodamati longya samasta bandhun.
Keshayani vodamati
harshly. Satyam. True. Kurusva. Please make. Nigamam, the promise, Tava,
pure,
Padamulam, the base of the lotus feet, Prapta, having obtained, Vayam, we, Tulasi Dhamma, garland of Tulasi leaves, Pada, by your foot. Avasrishtam, neglectfully kicked away. Keshai, upon our hair. Nivodum, in order to carry. Atilungya, rejecting. Samasta, all. Bandun, relations. Translation, the wives of the Brahmanas replied, O Almighty One, please do not speak such cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kindness. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest, so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves you may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships. Purport. Here the Brahmana's wives are saying something similar to what the gopis say at the beginning of the rasa dance when Krishna tells them to go home as well. Like this verse, the Gopi statement begins with the words Mayavam Vibhorati Bhavan Garitam Narsangsam. Nigama refers to the Vedic literature, which states that one who surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord does not return to this material world. Thus, the Brahmana's wives appealed to the Lord that since they had surrendered to him, it was unfair for him to order them to return to their materialistic husbands. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna might have pointed out to the Brahmin's wives, "You young ladies are members of the aristocratic Brahmin community, so how can you surrender at the lotus feet of a mere cowherd boy?" To this, the ladies might have replied, "Since we have already surrendered at your lotus feet, and since we desire to become your servants, we are obviously not maintaining a false identification as members of the so-called Brahmin community. You can easily ascertain this from our words." Lord Krishna might have replied, "I am a cowherd boy, and my proper maidservants and girlfriends are the cowherd girls, the gopis." The wise might have answered, "True, let them be so. Let them shine forth. If you are embarrassed in front of your relatives to make Brahmana ladies your maidservants, we certainly don't want to embarrass you. We will not go to your village, but will remain in Vrindavan like presiding deities in the forest. We simply desire to perfect our lives by even a slight trace of connection with you." Thus, by the spiritual insight of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we learn that the Brahmana's wives offered to remain at a distance and simply take the tulsi leaves that would fall from the lotus feet of Krishna or be crushed by the feet of his girlfriends when he would embrace them. The ladies offered to carry these tulsi leaves upon their heads, thus renouncing the desire to become Krishna's intimate girlfriends or maidservants, a position they knew was difficult to achieve. The young Brahmana ladies begged to remain in Vrindavan forest. If the Lord had then asked, "Then what will your family members say?" they would have replied, "We have already transcended our so-called relatives because we are seeing you, the Supreme Lord, face to face." I'll read the next verse also. "Our husbands, fathers, sons, brothers, and other relatives and friends will no longer take us back. And how could anyone else be willing to give us shelter? Therefore, since we have thrown ourselves at your lotus feet and have no other destination, please, O chastiser of enemies, grant our desire." Purport Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows. From their very youth, the Brahmana's wives had heard about Lord Krishna's beauty, qualities, and sweetness from the women folk of Vrindavan village, and also from the flower ladies, the betel nut sellers, and others. Consequently, they always felt ecstatic love for Krishna and were indifferent to their household duties. Their husbands, seeing them as deviant, doubted them and avoided dealing with them as far as possible. Now the wives of the Brahmanas are ready to formally reject their so-called families and neighbors, and out of great agitation they were crying and placing their heads upon Lord Krishna's lotus feet, offering obeisances. In this way, with choked voices, they spoke the above verse. They begged that Lord Krishna bestow upon them the benediction that he be their only destination, that he, the chastiser of enemies, subduer of all their enemies, those difficulties obstructing them from attaining the Lord. The wives of the Brahmanas simply wanted to serve Krishna, and that this is pure Krishna consciousness in ecstatic love of God. Translation: the wives of the Brahmanas replied, "O Almighty One, please do not speak such cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kind. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so we may carry out upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves you may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships." So here we see the expression of love or prema of these Brahmana women. And we see that it is also very intense. Just as the gopis are ready to sacrifice everything for Krishna, so these Brahmana women are also offering to give up everything for the Supreme Lord. And they actually have no regard for any material relationship, for material respect, for social criticism or anything. So this shows the intensity of their love. In, of course, we say bhakti is attraction to Krishna, surrender to Krishna, but it actually means a spiritual emotion directed towards Krishna. And we can call that love, though in the material world, love has other connotations due to materialistic ideas. However, when we say love here, we mean it is purely dedicated to Krishna and without any other desire than to please Krishna. And of course, that can take many forms. That love can take the form of serving Krishna and seeing Krishna as a superior who gives us mercy and bestows upon us things. So in this sense, one becomes a servant of Krishna, and that's dasya rasa. Or in one's loving relationship, one can act with equal exchange with Krishna, and then one develops sakya. Or one can think of Krishna as the object of compassion, and that one must protect him and do things for him, but he is helpless, and that becomes vatsalya rasa. Or one can have the relationship of directly relating to Krishna as we have relationships in this material world of conjugal love, and that becomes madhurya rasa. So in this way, there are various types of varieties of this love of the Supreme Lord. And in Vrindavan, we see that all of these types of love are cultivated with the form of Krishna. And of course, we'll see similar relationships, but somewhat restrained in Mathura and Dwarka. But then when we go outside of those places, we will see that the relationships are not so complete. We may not see Sakya manifest much. And for instance, with Vishnu. The Devatas have a little bit of Sakya relationship with Vishnu. But that is all. Mainly the persons in Vaikuntha are servants. So they have Dasya relationship with the Supreme Lord. And the only person that has Vatsalya relationship is, or there's no Vatsalya relationship at all in Vaikuntha because Vishnu doesn't have any parents. But there is a Madhurya relationship with Lakshmi. So the relationships are not so, variety of relationships are not there. But with Krishna we see the relationships, all relationships manifest fully and in a very free manner. So this love, even when there are so many varieties of love, even this love will manifest, and even when it is without restriction in the sense that the people of Vrindavan do not see Krishna as Supreme Lord, still there's variety there. In the love in Mathura or Dwarka, it is the same Krishna because he does not age past Kaishor age. He's eternally the same age when he leaves Vrindavan. So he never ages, so the form is actually the same in one sense, the same age. But people in Mathura and Dwarka also recognize Krishna as God. So therefore all these relationships of Sakya are there, Madhurya, etc. are there, but the interference of the seeing him as God is also there. So therefore they're not considered, those relationships are not considered on the same level, even though it is still Krishna. So in Vrindavan, of course, then there is no restriction because they don't see, the people there do not see Krishna as God, normally. Now, sometimes we will also see, even the gopis may pray to Krishna as the Supreme Lord sometimes. And here we the wives of the Brahmanas are saying Vibho. So this, of course, also refers to Almighty Lord, Supreme Lord. So at times we will see manifestations of this, but it is a temporary manifestation out of misery or whatever that the devotees express this sometimes, and then it gets covered over again. So when they're miserable, they take Krishna as Supreme Lord and they pray, "You please grant our wish," etc. But when they are actually meeting Krishna and they're in a joyful state and Krishna satisfies them, then they forget completely he is Supreme Lord. They don't think like that. So usually it is eclipsed, that idea. But in Vrindavan, even there, in all these different relationships, there's also different levels of intensity. Even in one person, they may exhibit different levels at different times. And of course, in different persons, they may come up to different levels of intensity of love. So this is the great variety of love in the spiritual world. There's so many varieties, and even there, so many gradations within one variety of love between the different persons. And everyone is satisfied with their particular degree of love. So, of course, the relationship in Madhurya Rasa, like the gopis with Krishna, that is considered to be the highest level of intensity. And the other relationships have somewhat less. So Rupa Goswami describes that, of course, Shanta Rasa is rather neutral. So it's put at the bottom because the intensity is not very much. But it is still a relationship with the Lord. So therefore it is called Rasa. But when we get to Dasya in Vrindavan, then Krishna has servants and they have prema. Definitely they have prema. And sometimes they may get a little higher than prema. It becomes more intense. And when we get to Sakya relationship with Krishna, then of course they have prema, but there is a great intimacy there also, in which they think of Krishna as an equal. So that is gives rise to more intense love. And the concentration of love also becomes more. And therefore, even though we say there's what three types of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prem bhakti, actually, prem bhakti is also a beginning. So we go bhava, prema, and then we get higher levels also. So we get sneha and raga, and then we even go higher than that in Madhurya Rasa, and they get anuraga, mana, and mahabhava. And these are what increases beyond prema. We can say it's included in prema, or we can say the stage is above prema even. So prema is a general term, but love in the spiritual world will go all these different levels with the different rasas. And of course, the Madhurya Rasa includes all of them. And the next level is Vatsalya, and then intensity, and then Sakya, and then Dasya. So the Vatsalya Rasa, that goes, it has prema, it also has sneha, and it also has raga. Of course, the Sakya people have raga also, and sometimes even the servants have a little raga also, which means such intensity of love that even a moment's separation from Krishna gives rise to the greatest disturbance, and they cannot live in separation from Krishna. They cannot tolerate separation from Krishna. They feel like they're dying if they're not, they don't have Krishna. That is the intensity on that level. So therefore we'll see that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, when Krishna leaves, then they all begin to almost die. They have it's a particular emotion called mriti, which means death. It's not real death because they never die, they're eternal. But they have symptoms of death because of their great separation and anxiety to see Krishna. That is the intensity of their love. So as we go higher, then that intensity increases so that they cannot bear separation. So raga is such a state. So when it comes to the Vatsalya Rasa, that they are considered to be continually on the stage of raga. The parents, like Mother Yasoda and Nanda, the intensity of that love and a separation from Krishna is a complete anxiety from them. That's how Krishna goes into the forest in the morning. Then they get in complete anxiety and they have to wait until afternoon time when he comes back, like 4 or 5 o'clock. And for that intervening period from morning time to evening time, they're sitting there in anxiety. All they do is worry about Krishna. And Mother Yasoda laments, I shouldn't have sent him to the forest. Even I have all these guards there to protect him from the Rakshasas, still, he may get hurt. He may tread upon some thorns and wound his foot or something. So she's continually worrying about Krishna and says, he must return. So they think like that all day long. As soon as he leaves, then they, of course, when he leaves, they can't even bear separation from him. So he goes out in the forest and they start following him. And all the villagers follow him. And then finally Krishna has to tell him, you have to go back now because I'm going to the forest. But they keep following and following. They cannot give him up. And then finally he says, you go back. So they go back and he says, you have to make me lunch anyway. So you make the lunch and then you send it to me. So the Mother Yasoda decides, okay, I have to make his lunch. And goes back home, kitchen, and does something. But they cannot bear separation. The Vatsalya Rasa is very, very strong. Raga. But then when we get to Madhurya Rasa, then that intensity becomes even more and turns into Anuraga, Mana, etc., and then Mahabhava. So we see in the example of the in the Bhagavatam where Uddhava comes back and then he sees the gopis, and then there's the whole chapter on the song of the bee and Radharani talking to the bumblebee. So that is the highest intensity of love, where in separation and Mahabhava, then they display all sorts of different symptoms, transformations. So that is the highest level. And so in this way, in the all the different devotees, they have different levels, and of course, the gopis can display all the levels of love, from bhava to prema to sneha, raga, anuraga, man, Mahabhava. All they display all of them. Of course, in Vatsalya it goes up to Raga, and other have less intensities. And among individuals, then there'll be all sorts of varieties. So among all the different friends of Krishna, there's going to be varieties of that love also expressed among the different devotees. And some are older and some are younger and some are equal to Krishna. Little varieties there. So it may be mixed with Vatsalya Rasa if the friends are older than Krishna, they like to protect him also. If they're younger than Krishna, they have a little dasya and they like to serve Krishna also. So there's always mixtures there also. So there's a continual variety. And when the pastimes take place on a daily basis in the spiritual world, then more variety is added to all of this. Because there's constant changing conditions, and in those conditions then all the devotees are feeling different emotions and acting in different ways with Krishna. So there's a continual variety. When the pastimes take place with these relationships with Krishna, the devotees do things, and Krishna responds to that. And the devotees respond to that, Krishna responds to that. So this is, there's a constant interaction. And response means not just actions, but emotions, spiritual emotions. So this gives rise to the taste of bliss, ananda, or rasa. So these are the ingredients. The different loving relationships are one of the ingredients. The different activities they do are the ingredients also. They're called anubhavas. And the experiences of love they get, ecstatic symptoms, sattvika bhavas, are another ingredient. And the temporary emotions they feel in those particular relationships, called vyabhichari bhavas, they're also part of the rasa. So therefore, even though it is all blissful, the spiritual world is all blissful, then temporarily in separation they may feel lamentation or depression, or they'll criticize themselves. Oh, I'm such a wicked person, unfortunate person, why did I do this? Why did we insult Krishna and he goes away like this? Or they may become very determined or enthusiastic or joyful. So there's all these little emotions taking place within the main idea of love. And some may look positive and some look negative, but it all adds to the total of bliss in the spiritual world. So in this way that all these different devotees are interacting with Krishna. So the Bhagavatam, the pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto, will show all of the varieties of love that take place. The broad categories, for instance, in the first chapters of the 10th canto, we'll find Vatsalya Rasa becomes very prominent there, with Madhya Yasoda and Damodar Leela and all these Leelas. Vatsalya Rasa, very, very prominent. Up to the Brahma Mohana Leela, like chapter 14, 13 and 14. And then it's all basically Vatsalya Rasa there. And within that, then Madhya Yasoda has all sorts of emotions displayed. Nanda has all sorts of emotions in relation with Krishna. And then later on, we find that the Sakya is there. Sakya relation is described in several chapters, with Krishna playing with his friends in the forest and playing games, etc. And Agasura demon, etc. All these different things with his friends. And then finally, we get in the later chapters, starting with the Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis, and then we start getting into Madhurya Rasa after that, and of course it culminates in the chapters on the Rasa Leela. So in this way, we get all these Leela or pastimes, which means events in which the bliss becomes manifest in all sorts of varieties with the devotees. So here we see one of the varieties of love expressed. Generally we see these different relationships are quite straightforward, but here we find a little bit of a difference because we have wives of the brahmanas expressing their love for Krishna. And it's a little bit different because they are, of course, wives of the brahmanas and are something like the gopis because they're also married and they're also young. But at the same time, they're brahmanas, so it's a little bit of a difference there. So there's a difference in the love, and it cannot be expressed in the same way as the gopis' love. And of course, the gopis also have difficulty expressing their love because they're also married, etc. And that is part of the rasa they have in rasa, in which they are married, and they're also having love for Krishna. Parakya rasa. So here we have such a kind of a situation with the wives of the brahmanas, but Krishna cannot respond in the same way. And as Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, and indicates in their purport, that Krishna will object and say, well, look, you have love for me, and you're trying to express your love, but this is not very good because, of course, you have husbands, that's one thing. But the other thing is, you're from Brahmin community, I'm from a Vaishya community, so we cannot really have a relationship like this. So it is a little bit different from the relationship with the gopis, even though they tried to express it. So, of course, the love is there. So we can appreciate that love in a general way. We see here how they cannot bear separation from Krishna, and therefore they're willing to sacrifice everything for that love. And that is expressed by the idea that let us simply remain here in the forest. We'll simply take shelter of your lotus feet and we'll remain in the forest. And we'll be satisfied even if you don't directly have a relationship with us. At least we will pick up the tulsi leaves that have fallen on the ground from your garland. We'll put them on our head and we'll be very, very satisfied with that. This is our association with you. So, in other words, they're not demanding so much from Krishna, but they're expressing their great devotion to him, and they're willing to sacrifice everything for him. So this is an indication of great love. As I said, the stage of raga, of course, means that one cannot tolerate separation. Below that, we have the idea that after prema, that one gives up everything and only concentrates upon the Supreme Lord and rejects everything else and has no regard for other relationships at all. So that we see expressed here, that they're willing to give up everything for the Supreme Lord, and they cannot tolerate separation from him. So this is praiseworthy, very praiseworthy emotion. So it is also classified as prema. So, of course, Krishna must respond appropriately. He is the Supreme Lord, and he fulfills the desires of his devotees, and he responds according to their desires. And he also responds in the most appropriate way. So therefore, he can never disappoint them. Now, of course, they become a little critical here, and they say, your words are very cruel. And you shouldn't speak cruel words to us because we're your devotees. But in the previous verse, he says, well, your husbands are brahmanas and householders, so you have to go and help your husbands. Now, their objection, of course, is that the husbands are, they don't appreciate Krishna because they had rejected the cowherd boys when they came. The cowherd boys said, Krishna and Balaram are hungry, so they're asking for some food. And you have lots of food here for the sacrifice, so please give something to Krishna and Balaram. And then the Brahmins refused. So the wives, of course, as it mentioned here, they had already heard about Krishna so much from different persons, and they developed their attraction for Krishna already. So when they heard this, they were willingly giving things to the cowherd boys to give to Krishna. And then they thought, our husbands are very, very disgusting. We shouldn't associate with our husbands anymore. They're completely useless because they don't have no attraction for Krishna. This is their sentiment here. Our husbands are useless, but that you're telling us to go back to our husbands again. So what is this? We have taken shelter of you, and you're throwing us back into the material realm. So of course Krishna must respond to his devotees, and yes, he protects them from the material world. I protect my devotees. I carry what they lack. I preserve what they have. Krishna definitely does that for devotees. So again, we can expect that Krishna will also solve the problem for the wives of the brahmanas, and he will not reject them. At the same time, he cannot act in the same way as he acts with the gopis. And at the same time, he cannot just make them go back to the husbands and suffer in the material world again. So Krishna is very clever, and he has a solution for everything. So he responds appropriately here also. One of the qualities of Krishna is he's very, of course, clever and expert, and can act according to the situation and find a solution in any particular situation, even in maybe a difficult situation. Krishna will come up with the right solution, and he'll do one act, and it'll fit perfectly in spite of the fact that it looks impossible to solve the situation. So therefore, Krishna does this, makes everyone satisfied, and at the same time, there's no disturbance. Okay. Question?
You mentioned the Nishanta is also a relationship with Krishna?
Yeah.
How does that relationship express Nishanta?
In the Nectar of Devotion, there, Rupa Goswami says, well, there are some people, some in the material world, they have rasa also in like Natya Shastra, dramatics and plays and stuff. They have the same type of rasas. But it says some people don't think that Shanta is a rasa. Because usually Shanta is associated with more impersonal aspect, and then it's not a real object because it has no form and qualities. But then he says, no, when we talk about Shanta rasa, we mean that the person has a relationship with the Supreme Lord. He concentrates upon the Supreme Lord, so there is an object there. But there is no desire to serve, as in Dasya. But nevertheless, there's recognition of the Supreme Lord and appreciation of his form. So he gives many examples of Shantarasa, and basically it seems that they come, or there are several varieties, but generally they are people who have done austerities and then got the mercy of the Lord. They were striving for liberation or whatever, and then got the mercy of the Lord, and somehow are devotees, and then they develop some attraction for the Lord also. So they prefer that to Brahman, but still this is not developed to the extent of eagerness to serve the Lord. So that becomes Shantarasa. Or the Atmaramas, those who've already got to the level of realization that I am the spirit soul, I'm not the body. So they're very peaceful. They get mercy of the devotees and the Lord, and then they also develop attraction for the Lord. But it's not a developed relationship. Huh? So therefore, it's a relationship with the Lord, but not developed much. Therefore, they don't have service attitude, etc. So they appreciate the form of the Lord more than anything else, and not so much the pastimes and the qualities. And that's the extent of their relationship. So because it recognizes the Lord, it's called a rasa. And they have ecstatic symptoms, sattvika bhavas, etc. So, you know, the rasa is defined as having a relationship with the Lord. So they have a relationship. Sattvika bhavas, ecstatic symptoms. They may develop tears in the eyes or shiver or change their color when they see the form of Krishna. Like that. Or anubhavas. Sometimes they voluntarily do actions. That's kind of limited in this relationship, because in like singing and whatever, dancing are considered anubhavas. So they may express their joy by doing these different activities of praising the Lord or whatever. And vyabhachari bhavas, that's a little bit of a small emotions like joy and sorrow. They separated from the Lord, they may feel anxiety. I have to see the Lord again. So a little bit, but not much. So of the rasas is considered the at the bottom. Are there spirit in the spiritual world? Are there prostitutes? Is that what you're saying? How are the prostitutes? Well, I don't know if that's in the spiritual world. That's when there's describing here in the pastimes of Krishna in the material world. So whether that exists in the spiritual world, maybe not. I don't know. But in the material world, Krishna is very merciful. So therefore, all types of persons can enter into his pastimes, definitely. If someone is in Dwarka or Mathura and has some sort of relationship with the Lord, they have to be considered exalted also. We see it mentions here about the betel nut sellers and the flower lady or whatever here. This, of course, is Vrindavan. So even they have some exalted status because they get to associate with the Lord. Like the flower, the woman selling fruits that came to Krishna or whatever, or the aborigine women who see the kumkum on the ground and they smear it on their breasts or whatever, or the deer in the forest or whatever. So anyone who associates with Krishna should be considered very fortunate, but at the same time we see the higher level is the cowherd men and women. They are much more fortunate than anyone else in Vrindavan because of the direct relationship. Similarly in Dwarka or Mathura, we'll find all sorts of people there. The main devotees are the Rishnis. And of course then we get the Pandavas and other devotees in other places as well. They are the main devotees there, the Rishni dynasty. And then we get a few others like Kubja and a few others like that. And of course we have the queens of Dwarka there in Madhurya Rasa. And then we get the inhabitants, general inhabitants of Dwarka. So there's all sorts of people there as in any city. And in same in Mathura. But, of course, generally they're all devotees of the Lord. But I said various grades due to their sadhanas or whatever. They'll be in various positions there. So therefore we'll get the launderers and the flower sellers and the betel nut people and the whatever in Dwarka and the prostitutes and whatever, since it's a city. So they're devotees of sorts. They've got that position. But that's not necessarily the eternal position either. There's an appearance when Krishna comes into this material world. There's an appearance that, of everything being very human-like for Krishna. So his form is more human-like. He's the same size as everybody else. His family is common with others. He's born in a certain family, etc. And many of his activities are all the same as everybody else's activities. He doesn't act in a very extraordinary way in most circumstances, and it's hard to tell. So he blends in with the society, more or less, in these pastimes. So that's part of the unique in his manifestation here in the material world. Now, in the spiritual world, there's also similar to that, because he's also human-like there. But when it comes to the material world, it even becomes more human-like. And therefore, Krishna grows. He doesn't grow in the spiritual world, but he grows here. And he's born. It looks like he's born anyway. And then he starts growing up. Even though he has an eternal form, somehow he manages to change his form also at the same time when it comes to pastimes in the material world. In response to his devotees who like to see him in different ages.
So in the spiritual world,
Kishore age all the time.
Sorry?
He's always Kishore age.
What age?
About 8 years old, 10 years old. Suitable for Madhurya Rasa, but it's also suitable for all other pastimes. So even Vatsalya Rasa, even though they like to see Krishna as a baby, they still see him as a young child, even when he's in Kishore age. They'll see him younger than that. Their vision is like that. And the friends can relate with him in that age also, and the servants can relate with him in that age also. So it's suitable for all ages. Whereas if Krishna is maybe, there's no Madhurya Rasa, there's no Sakya Rasa, there's only Vatsalya Rasa. So therefore, in the first chapters of the 10th canto, it's all Vatsalya Rasa. We don't see Sakya Rasa there, and we don't see Madhurya Rasa. We can say that the husbands are there for the pastimes. And they're more like something like a yoga maya representation there, only in order to make that pretense of, parakiya bhava, like that. There's not much description of them having a direct relationship with Krishna, so we can't take them on the same level. And therefore, for the pastimes, when Krishna is in the material world and then he plays his flute and some gopis get stopped by their husbands, this is of course part of pastimes also. And then it says that some even give up their lives, so to speak. So Vrishnanath Chakravarti comments, well, you cannot. This would be very inauspicious on the night of the Rasa Lila to have people dying. Says it cannot mean that. So what it means is actually, by the intense separation from Krishna, these are people who had formed sadhana, and they got to finally associate with Krishna and his pastimes. They still had some impurity, therefore they could not directly go to Krishna. But by that separation, arranged by Krishna through his potencies, the intensity of separation burned up whatever impurities were there, and they attained perfection by the intensity of their love and separation, and therefore they got their pure spiritual body. So that was, they destroyed the last remnants of their impure material bodies and attained their spiritual body. But then we could say, well, then the Rasa Lila went, and then in those bodies they were able to go to the Lord. So it wasn't that they were deprived of association with the Lord. The Lord fulfilled their desire also on that night, or on next night. So Krishna performed Rasa Lila for a year. So then the question comes, well, how is it that her husbands didn't notice that? They'd run out every night. Obviously the husbands would grab them and lock them up, and after the third time they'd probably have the whole family around them all night. So how were they able to get out? So then the explanation is that one form remained there in the house, and okay, everyone accepted that. Other form, by Krishna's potency, another form developed, and that form went to enjoy with Krishna and the Rasa Lila every night. Yeah. So both people were satisfied. Husbands and family were satisfied, or they're at home, and Krishna was satisfied, and the gopis were satisfied also. So that's all Krishna's arrangement, or his Shakti's arrangement, Yoga Maya potency arrangement. All that basically for pastimes, and the pastimes are there to increase the bliss. So those husbands actually only manifested for showing, for creating leelas of the Lord and bliss.
I think bhakti is all about developing love for Krishna. And Krishna is also distributing and reciprocating the love of the devotees, and he is requiring the love also in exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So why is the beginners or the one who has to become a devotee has to renunciate and not to consider all the other relationships and
what, renounce family and everything?
Yes.
Oh, well, bhakti means we do those things favorable for developing a sadhana bhakti, that is, for Krishna, and we reject the unfavorable things. So bhakti means we develop attraction without motivation for Krishna and serving him and trying to please him at all times. So therefore, everything else, every other attraction for serving anything else with any other mota will be a distraction from that and unfavorable. So if we want to speak absolutely, we can say that everything in the material world is a distraction and unfavorable, because it's not related to Krishna. It's related somehow to our own enjoyment. So in that sense, yes, we have to reject everything. And even Christ said the same thing. If you want to love the Lord, then you have to reject your love of your father and your mother and your children, whatever. You have to give it all up. Ultimately. But Krishna says it's artificial to renounce everything immediately and suddenly. So let it be a gradual process. So you perform bhakti and you have your relationships, and gradually, by the performance of bhakti, then everything becomes secondary to that. As the relationship with Krishna increases, the attraction to the other things will decrease and decrease. But necessarily, all the relationships in the material world are other than Krishna, so therefore they're a distraction. And all those relationships are for oneself. So again, it's enjoyment. So enjoyment for self is an obstruction to giving enjoyment to Krishna, which is real love. So they go in opposite directions, so therefore it's considered unfavorable.
Maharaj, how do we practice renunciation in a particular ashram without being hard-hearted and impersonal?
Well, this is called Yukta Vairagya. We do not do Fagu Vairagya. We give up, that means giving up the objects of this world, because we want to become detached and attain liberation. That's Fagu Vairagya. So Yukta Vairagya means, yes, we recognize detachment is necessary from material sense enjoyment in the world, self-enjoyment, etc. But as far as this material world and everything in the material world, people and objects, we try to engage them in Krishna's service rather than our own service as much as possible. So therefore, in any ashrama, one is in the ashramas because we do have some material desire. If we don't have any material desires, we're beyond ashrama. We're liberated souls. So if we have desires, we're in some ashram or other. The highest, of course, ashram being sannyas ashram, where you give up as much as possible, and you're striving for complete detachment. And the other ashrams have more degrees of attachment. And, of course, vanaprastha has some detachment also, on practicing more detachment. Grihastha ashram is, of course, more attachments, but also one has to practice detachment because one has to come to the stage of vanaprastha or sannyas later on. So, as far as that is concerned, one follows the rules of the Grihastha ashram, which allows raising a family, which means it allows some attachment, because you can't raise a family without some sort of attachment, because it means responsibilities. You have to be responsible for taking care of them and feeding them and whatever. That means that some attachment has to be there. So Varnashram system recognizes, yes, attachment is there. Therefore, concession is made for that. Rules are there for governing that attachment. So yes, take care of your children and wife and whatever. You have to do that. And the rules are there for doing that. So we have to follow within those rules. So what the rules generally do is they put a limit on everything. Put a limit on how much we should enjoy in the material world. So restrictions are there. And as much as possible, everything should somehow relate with the Supreme Lord, directly or indirectly. Some things can directly be related to the Lord, some things indirectly.
Well, in the conditioned state, you say that Krishna is reciprocated through the devotees. Right? Through the devotees in the conditioned state.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the name of
Krishna. Yeah.
Krishna comes through the devotees. So is it not that how to the below Krishna to the extent to which we have a good relationship and with the devotees? Like what I'm trying to say is that all the rasa and all that, does it not manifest among the devotees?
No, rasa only manifests, it begins to manifest in bhava and prema, with the direct perception of Krishna. So in sadhana bhakti, we won't have a manifestation of rasa. Because relationships in the material world are maya. And they cause problems for us and they're detrimental to the bhakti. But then, of course, we have sadhu sangha as an anga of bhakti. So it is favorable to bhakti. It's not only favorable to bhakti, but it's actually part of bhakti, necessary for bhakti to develop. And it's also the seed of bhakti, because without the sadhu sangha, you cannot even get faith. And after you get faith, you can't go further unless you get sadhu sangha also. So it's a necessary element of bhakti itself, that is association with devotees. It's through them that one gets mercy. So that relationship is there. That relationship, of course, is defined more or less in the for the Madhyama Adhikari. Is he acts in a friendly way with those devotees on an equal level, and he tries to give instruction out of mercy to those who are on a lower level, and he serves those who are on a higher level. So that's his mode of relationship. there's a relationship there, but we cannot say that's the same type of relationship one has with one's family members or whatever in the Maya world or with other people in the material world, because this is a function of bhakti. Now it can come down to a material level also. One could possibly contaminate material friendship with one's friendship in devotional service also. It could be there. And so the attachment could be the arise for material reasons also, which would be a contamination, so to speak. But when they talk about this sadhu sangha, then this is a anga bhakti, and it's all spiritual. So the relationship is established based upon bhakti itself.
No.
Those things go on eternally. And in the spiritual world, everybody relates with everybody. In other words, the gopis are relating with the gopis. And they have their sadhu sangha, talking with each other, encouraging each other, whatever. And when Krishna leaves, they all comfort each other and console each other. So it's an eternal also.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Swami, 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 Swami.